coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Well ahoy, my friends. Hope your journey here didn't give you the bends. Any worry you had, here is where it ends. Look, Flukes brought you a toy. Well ahoy, oh, it's such a joy. Here's my darling wife and my bouncing boy. And that old black manta is bound to annoy. Aqualad is my decoy. The curries of Atlantis are just like
there it
you
is.
And
I'm leaving that in. ladies and gentlemen, this is Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is my co-host.
I am what I am.
The man powered by cream spinach. Regular
spinach.
Listen, I don't know whether you're doing Mickey from Rocky or whether you're doing... but that of course is the Jedi Cole Houston.
You'll be strong to finish if you eat your spinach, Rock.
That's a mashup that never happened and should've.
That's so true. Kind of puts you in the mind of Ray Walston in the Popeye movie where remember a friend of mine in high school was complaining, I don't remember Poop Deck Pappy ever going, Haul ass.
And tonight, we're going to spend the next hour talking about Westworld, because I just finished it, and I have so many questions. And oddly enough, for a show like that, so many answers.
So many things I didn't see that coming.
Some of them I did. Some of them I absolutely did not. And we can't say anything for life. And this is not a podcast about Westworld.
That's the other reason we can't say anything.
But then again, that's never stopped us from doing that. But this time it will, because Cole, in his infinite genius, came up with a topic tonight that absolutely deserves the treatment. Beyond, I think this is as important a topic as any topic that we've ever done that's kind of, you know, staying in the lane of a particular genre. This one is as important as any of them that we've done. So what are we doing tonight, Cole?
Well, tonight we're truly going to discover that it is better down where it's wetter.
Well, I could have told you
under
that.
The sea.
I'm wearing pull-ups.
You're always wearing.
Yeah, I always do that when we record. That's not special.
Yeah, fetishism and this are do not.
Hey, fetishism. Don't confuse fetishism with practicality. All right.
Well, that's true. We are going to be at this for about an hour.
I'm older, and we do a show. I don't let biological imperatives get in the way of this recording.
Why stop now? So basically, we're going to be casting a wide net here. Yeah. We have in mind is this is the 75%ers, and it takes its name from the Earth being 75% water.
Yes. Now, when we were – okay, so first of all, Cole, I think it, for our longtime veteran listeners, those who have been around for a long time, they know that we do not back down from a conversation about how Aquaman is the best thing in the DC universe.
Oh, hell, yes. Now, this could easily have been just the Aquaman-centric issue.
Right, but we've done that, or at least something along those lines. Also, those longtime listeners to the show know that personally, in your personal life, you hold a very you hold the character of Namor near and dear to your heart. For personal reasons.
Yeah.
So this is a very, very special topic for you, I think, across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is one I not only do I have a fondness for the Aquaman himself, but for the Aquaman, if you will. Because they're just undersea characters are just sort of the ancillary sidebar characters very often, and they're just kind of depending on the writers and artists, they're not always given a chance to live up to their potential.
Rarely, very rarely. Because in my research and in actually thinking about this, and I'm a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan. So for every H.P. Lovecraft monster that comes from the stars, there's one that comes from the sea. And in saying that, I think that as a society, as a scientific society, and I'm not talking about comic books, I'm talking about real life people, flesh and blood, we know more about shallow space than we know about deep ocean.
That is so true. And that in the reels is underscored highly by the fact that you do still, when there was the massive tsunami several years back, they were finding species of animal that were dredged up from the bottom of the sea by the earthquake forces that no one had ever seen before.
Yeah.
And we discover things like life, the assumption, the very Victorian assumptions of about the nature of life. The oceans have provided glaring examples of the fact that, you know, a lot of our assumptions about the necessities of life are fallible, not the least of which is you cannot sustain life without access to sunlight, that you get down to a certain depth and there's just nothing there, so life can't possibly, except when you discover that there are other alternatives, like tonnage of minerals being belched up by the earth at volcanic vents.
Right, right.
And you have like 100 species no one ever imagined were possible. And so, you know, it is into that rich environment that you find a lot of really interesting aquatic characters. Some of them become fascinating in the hands of the right people. Some of them become nothing. They're just sort of there like, oh, looky, we got an Aquaman.
Right. And one of the things that really bothers me about a lot of the storylines, and I don't even know, I can't point to a single one that really, really does a good job with this, is most of these the undersea stories are basically just land-based stories translated to the ocean.
Yeah, it becomes a bit like Saturday morning cartoons, where if you study them long enough, you find the exact same story recurring. And wait a minute, this Transformers story was done in the Care Bears.
But we consider it. So we say that we have mapped, you know, the landmass of the Earth. And essentially what we're saying in the height of hubris is we've mapped 25% of our planet.
Yes, exactly.
And that is horrifying.
Yeah, we've taken all the mystery out of this planet now.
Now it's space. What about the 75%?
Hip hip Sir Malcolm.
That's right. Rose, we're mapped. What about that?
Never you mind.
I don't know about it.
So where would you like to start this?
Well, one need not explore. Well, one cannot find active porters carry your things for
I really like the stutter. You've developed this character very well.
We're heavily workshopped out now. Yes, indeed. Well, excuse me, I must go and have my afternoon brandy.
Well, there off he went, Mister. There was Victorian gentleman explorer.
Just stopped in and say hey.
Actually known as Victorian Gentleman Explorer Man.
I like him. I like
That's his power, is to be a Victorian Gentleman Explorer.
Maybe one day I'll get to yes and Victorian Gentleman Explorer Man a little more, but we have much to discuss tonight.
Oh, absolutely. He's rather long-winded, so it's best that it's time for his afternoon brandy. So you have first I think that the most high profile, the obvious, are Aquaman and Namor, the players on the opposite sides, the two sides of one coin. They're both princes of Atlantis, which gets really awkward when their worlds merge across
every 20, 30 years when that happens.
Yeah. So, you know, it becomes a bit like Land and Winter. It's just far too many princes running around.
Did you just compare Aquaman and Namor to a lion in winter? Wow. I like it. I'm glad that happened.
Well, we loved Aquaman here at the castle, don't you know?
Don't you know?
That wasn't actually damn it, Audrey Hepburn?
No,
that was Audrey Hepburn. Well, not Audrey Hepburn.
It was Audrey Hepburn, not Audrey Hepburn. You're absolutely
yes,
right.
It's another one of those bizarro characters from a lot of the Muggerville. While we're on the subject of oceanic, marine, and otherwise aquatic characters, this just in, apparently there has been an aquatic character in Muggerville.
Has there now?
Yeah, down by Sloppy Creek in Muggerville.
Damn it. Sloppy Creek.
Yeah, it rather apropos because it's their aquatic hero of Muggerville is none other than Seaman.
Oh, God. Okay. Can you please tell me what Seaman...
It's kind of like if you took Aquaman from DC and Multiple Man from the X-Men.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yes. Similar sort of idea.
Okay. Just let your imagination go on that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's just say there's a lot of swimmers.
I was going to say, how many strong... I thought you were going to say that his super group is the strong swimmers.
So we're going to leave that where it landed and move on.
Okay. So where do you want to start? What character do you want to start with? Do you want to start with the obvious or the less obvious?
Let's sort of weave the obvious through the narrative, because you can't not be familiar with the likes of Namor, the savage Submariner,
right?
And Aquaman, because they have had such a very high profile. Aquaman benefited from being part of the Justice League from day one with his weird yellow glove. Like he was like doing dishes when Starro arrived. And that's why he was wearing those Playtex gloves over his regular green gloves. It would be revealed later. You don't want to get all that soap all over you when you're down underwater.
You certainly don't. You certainly don't.
And so, you know, Aquaman has always had a presence. He got to be in the Super Friends. He got to, you know, there was always a chance for you to encounter Aquaman, where the Submariner, you know, went decades. Of course, I guess he did have one of those, like, non-moving cartoons.
Yes.
Where they would have a weird little song at the beginning. I don't recall. That one wasn't as memorable as, like, Iron Man or Hulk. It was probably just more, you know, spoken word. It's this sort of like, you know, hit this beatnik backbeat with bongos, like, Submariner. And then they just went right into the cartoon.
You know,
that was it. It was just like, very, very unusual show.
Well,
but you know, the thing is, they've both been around for freaking ever.
Right. Now, there is a Submariner. So the Submariner that we kind of all know and love at this point is the Submariner. We all know the Get Your Girl Submariner from the 60s. We all know the later kind of cocky, arrogant member of the Illuminati Submariner from like the 2000s. But my favorite Submariner was the Submariner from the 90s. Now,
yes, the burn notice Submariner.
Burn notice sub. That's perfect. Burn notice Submariner. Now, if you aren't familiar with burn notice Submariner, let me give you a little. let me hatch it to the skinny. Submariner gets sick of pollution in his oceans, which, you know, like you do. I'll go with that.
Yeah. But I mean, look what happened to the smog monster, Godzilla.
But what he does,
but it was pollution.
That was he was sick of himself. It was a real.
Yeah. Self-loathing.
Yeah, he got lots of therapy. But he gets sick of that, sick of trying to, you know, do the old Submariner, you know, shtick where he shows up at the UN with his tidy greenies and his little ankle wings, you know, stomping and ranting and raving and, you know, hitting the butt of his spear on the ground and yelling. He goes to a bunch of shipwrecks, I think maybe one, maybe a bunch of shipwrecks, collects a bunch of gold, opens a business called Oracle Inc., and decides to take them on in the boardroom. Sometimes on the Manticore, writing the character of the Manticore.
Yes, you know, indeed.
You know, so it was sort of like Bruce Wayne meets Lex Luthor, but also he can breathe underwater and rides
sort of like Aqua Luthor.
yeah, it was.
In many ways, very much an Aqua Luthor. Yeah, Byrne became fascinated with just sort of telling the corporate, you know, Captain of Industry style tales during that period. So you got a lot of characters going that route in many ways. And this was certainly one of the more interesting. And one of the things that Byrne loves is you can, you know, love or hate some of his concepts. You can tell he loves him some comics.
Yeah.
And he loves him some comic characters. And one of the curious things he does, I actually had the benefit of reading an article about what was going on in his John Byrne brain when he was taking over Namor. Because Byrne would just sort of hove in and take things over, and you would, you know, there you'd be. And so in this particular case, what he was talking about is he very much captured kind of like in Starman.
Right.
How Shade, they sort of recognized that over the decades, different writers had portrayed Shade in so many different ways that rather than just sort of do what you normally do, and that's just, well, that's in the past, and we pretend it never happened, they pretended it did happen and gave you an explanation. And that's kind of what they were doing, what Byrne was doing with Namor, is to find reasons for the fact that sometimes he's like, I'm going to be with the invaders and help save the world from the Axis powers. And other times he'd be like, I hate everyone, I will kill you all, landlubbers.
Right, right.
That was, I don't think he ever called them landlubbers, but there you
had. I wish he did.
God, if only. But
dirt barnacles.
Dirt barnacles. That's actually very worthwhile because they have.
Right.
As a society, we cling ourselves to the dirt and we're an
animal. Impossible to get off.
Yeah. So, Byrne created this concept that he got this sort of Ponfar kind of thing going on where his blood would start boiling and he goes all nuts and goes on a rampage, brings the whole nation of Atlantis to the brink of war, and then says, the hell are we doing out here, guys?
Right. This
and
is
this
all
little
wrong.
Wonder Atuma got pissed off all the time. It's like, every time I get to bring out my big trident sword, we're just I'm going to go up and wage holy hell on land. And then you say, oh, no, sorry, everybody back in the pool.
I have this weird, I got so many back problems from wearing this weird blue snake headpiece all the time, every
you
time.
Know how hard it is to move through the water when you have opposing rudders on your head.
Every time I get Gigantus out of his pen, I gotta put him right back in. That's thousands of man hours of work. Like, this guy calls himself a CEO. You can't even where are the cost loss sheets? I need to see. Right. Oh my god. No, but it was pretty, you know, John Byrne's one of those guys where, you know, you ask, you're like, okay, we need to crazy up Namor. Like,
yeah.
Okay, well, okay, so there's two options. You can either take it to an Alan Moore level of crazy or a John Byrne level of crazy. Well, I don't want him to get super serious. I don't want people questioning at the end of this comic whether he actually, you know, choked Black Manta to death off panel. Let's turn it over to Byrne. I got ideas. God, why do we always turn it over to Byrne?
Yeah. Well, as long as he keeps his wife out of the mix, what?
What? Oh. Well, my favorite character she created was Polyamorous. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, wait, that was Muggerville 7 material.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah, Polyamorous, you gotta love her.
She's Seaman's wife, right?
Yeah, she is
It's
indeed.
Like Shayna the She-Devil, she's the only woman that can satiate Seaman.
That's right.
God, we're gross.
Welcome to Naked's Comics After Dark.
So yeah, that's one of the things that I love, because you're right. And this is, okay, so what I was talking about earlier where they just take land stories and just translate them like, oh, let's imagine that there's roads in the sea, but there's no roads. Go. Is Namor's been used in so many capacities over like the last 60 years. So many capacities. Like you said, he was in the Invader. He's been a bad guy. He's been a steal yo girl. He's been a good guy. He's been a corporate CEO.
He's been an Avenger, for God's sake.
He's been an X-Men. He's been an Avenger. He's been
okay.
An Invader.
I'm glad you brought up the X-Men.
Oh, I did it. Damn it.
Here we go.
Here we go.
This has opened up a can of worms. This is one of the biggest bones of contention I've ever had. Was the classification of Namor the First Mutant.
Here we go.
Why does Namor, out of necessity, have to be a mutant? He is not human, number one. He is not Atlantean, number two. He is half human, half Atlantean. By the very comic book definition at Marvel of a mutant is the next stage in human evolution. Therefore, ergo, by his very nature as a half-breed between two species that should be impossible to crossbreed, and this is also a thinly veiled recommendation for Saga from Image Comics. Excellent stuff. X-ish, as Steven I used to say. I just can't even find the words. I'm going to give myself a brain problem here if I keep at this.
Let's not forget he was a defender.
Yeah.
That's five. That's five groups they've had Namor in. Five of them.
Yeah, and people are like, and Namor is
part of it. They just can't figure out what to do with this guy. Yeah. He is comic books David S. Pumpkins.
That's right. they are heavily invested in Namor, but they really can't tell you why.
There's 100 floors. They can't all be winners. That should be on Namor's biography. Holy shit. Like, that is so true. The poor guy. And you know what? Aquaman hasn't had it any easier. He's got the same boat. They just can't figure out what to do with the sea. You would think that they'd have some, like, so let me ask you this, because I don't know the answer. Maybe you do. Has like, Alan Moore ever done anything with Aquaman or the sea or you know, sea-based? Because it seems like a shoe-in that you would throw him into this and let him figure out what he would do, you know?
Now that you mention it, I got, like, these weird chills all of a sudden, because I would love to see his take on that very self-limiting, because Alan Moore has one of those great, is one of those writers who can take a self-limiting concept and turn it so far on its ear. And I would love to see what he would do with Aquaman more so than Namor, because Aquaman at least gives you more to play with.
Right, right.
But as we talk about, you know, the sea-based characters, and we're going to get into some pretty awkward stuff under the sea. Because Namor is just a wonderfully Marvel kind of character, a wonderfully Lee and Kirby-era character, because you have this guy who's half Atlantean, half human. So how do you distinguish that from, like, everybody else guy?
Right.
And that is, you give him pointy ears and Hermes wings on his ankles.
Which makes no sense, by the way.
Yeah, it's like, where did that even come into the equation? And yet decades and decades pass, and we're just so used to it that nothing else really matters. You just know for some reason he has these awkward little wings, which means he has to have a tremendous thigh gap to keep them from interior wings from slapping into each other while he's flying.
Tremendous thigh gap, ladies and gentlemen. Tremendous
Hashtag Namor is tremendous thigh gap.
Hold on. I need to write that in these notes right here. you're right. But there's a couple things about, because we did we do an Aquaman show for Hey Kids Comics, or did we do it for Comicast? Do you remember?
I honestly don't recall, because I don't think we've done a strictly Aquaman show for this one, because it would have stuck, I would hope, from when I was putting together the back issue bins.
But if you there's a seminal Aquaman storyline in which the one where he loses his hand and ultimately ends up with a cybernetic hook.
Absolutely. In fact, if you can't get John Byrne to come in and reimagine your character, and if Alan Moore is busy, there was a time where your go-to person was Peter David.
Oh, yes, it was. Oh, and he's still around.
Go around, like, reimagining himself all over the Hulk or all over Aquaman or others. And it was like Peter David and John Byrne were, like, they may not have even been two different people, because one seemed to be at Marvel whenever the other was at DC.
Right. Right. But he gave us a story in which Aquaman loses his hand to how do you pronounce the enemy's name? The villain?
Charybdis. As you actually this Aquaman villain is one of the only Aquaman villains in a Sting song.
Is he?
Yeah. Actually, I think Sting was referring to the Scylla and Charybdis from mythology.
From Greek mythology?
He was reaching a little further back in time.
Well, so Charybdis had the ability to negate Aquaman's telepathic fish-talking powers. That's what made him a villain, was that he took that one, you know, what do they say in the land of the blind, the man with one eye is king? Well, in the land of the ocean where everybody can swim as fast as a car, it's going to be a throw forward joke. And
very nice.
And, you know, and can withstand the pressures of the ocean. The one thing that makes you a superhero under the sea against anybody else who lives under the sea is the ability to talk to fish. So you take that away, and that's like a piscine kryptonite. So he takes at one point in the storyline, he holds Aquaman's hand under the water as a test, you know, to show him that he doesn't have power, into a pool of piranha, and Aquaman can't tell the piranha not to eat his hand, and the piranhas eat his hand. So that's how he ends up with his fabulous hook hand that he carries around through most of the late 90s and early 2000s.
That's right, until he gets up the upgrade to a water hand.
Right, which is a whole nother thing. Again, you don't know what to do with water-based characters. It's ridiculous.
But what is interesting about Peter David's take on Aquaman? Because I remember reading that very specific issue of Aquaman under David, that one of the things that struck me is he took the idea of Aquaman's, you know, fish speak ability and gave it one more little twist that no one had ever thought about, because Charybdis is, God, it's been decades now, but it's like he's complaining about his inability to use the power as he perceived it.
Right.
And Aquaman explains to him it's not as simple as that.
Right.
Essentially, it isn't just going like, "Hey, fish, do my bidding." He basically, in blasting Charybdis, is telling him, you know, it's partly what you think, but it isn't just simply demanding that fish do what you do. You have to, depending on the fish, you know, you cajole, you trick, you entice. It's not simply, "Hey, fish, come over here and pick this lock." You know, you have to, there's some technique to it, and finesse, and some, you know, to quote Han Solo, simple tricks and nonsense.
Right. It's a communication. You're finding out what they want. You're talking to them. You know, it's almost like an Alan Moorean concept, and I'm sure Peter David would punch me in the dick for that comparison. but you know, it's that we communicate with the animals. We're not just telling them what to do. We're approaching them on equal footing. And Charybdis didn't get that, so he wasn't able to conquer Aquaman, and Aquaman ended up, you know, beating the shit out of him on land as an extra thumb in the eye. Here's it to you on land, pal. But yes, more interesting than the story is the title of this comic, which is why I really brought it up.
I did not recall that part.
The title of this issue of Aquaman it's Aquaman number 2, titled "A Single Wet Female." Damn it, Peter David. How did you do that? How did you pass that by the censors? You sorry son of a bitch. Just single wet female. You know, another recent
apparently double entendre is just not something they were prepared for.
Yeah, they were not hip to the double entendre. Another thing that was really interesting that was a recent revelation about Aquaman, and I think this was in the New 52, which is how they got away with it, is that Aquaman has this group of superheroes that they call them remarkable individuals, that he's been hanging out with for like the last 30 years, and nobody knew about it. And I think that's great. They all have an artifact, an Atlantean relic that gives them sort of superpowers, but you know, they've always just kind of, he calls them together sometimes, like at the lodge, and has them all go out and do stuff. So, like,
what is this, like the Bookhouse Boys of the Sea or something?
It is. It is. There's Kaina the Seer. There's the Prisoner of War. There's Sky Akalisi. There's the Operative. And Volstock X. Of course,
naturally, it all makes perfect sense now.
Yeah, but these are people that just hang out and I can imagine like the Justice League like hey, we're all going out for barbecue tonight. Do you want to go? No, I gotta go hang out with I got something to do. Like, well, oh, who what do you got to do? Some King of Atlantis stuff? No, I'm going. I gotta go get. I promised some people I'd go get drinks with them. Oh yeah, who's that? Anybody we know? Zatanna? Is Zatanna gonna be there? No, it's my other group of super friends. What? Yeah. You have another group of super friends? How long? 30 years. We've known you for 10 years, and you never mentioned these. Yeah, you know, we get together once in a while and fight super crime and shit. And
why is no one? Not only why do we not know about this, but why does nobody know about this?
Right? Like, oh, Black Manta.
How did the rest of the world get away without knowing this?
Yeah, I love the idea. It was because, why did they, there was something like Black Manta, he recruits them periodically to fight Black Manta, and the story is that, you know, years after they disbanded, Black Manta does something in Russia, right? And some weird Russian thing, and Arthur calls them all back together to go after him, and
so there's that chestnut,
and but he doesn't he doesn't ask the JLA to do it, so I can imagine how well that goes over. Like Batman is a son of a bitch. You don't tell Batman that you and your other group of super friends are going out to Russia to
fight.
You
went to Russia without me?
Right? I know people in Russia. Well, yeah, Batman, but you know you're super broody, and we kind of are. Have you met Prisoner of War? He's kind of our own Batman. Batman, so we don't really need another Batman.
I owe NKVD man another punch in the face. I promised him.
Did you promise him that last time I punched him in the face?
It's just, I can only imagine that. That's the off panel I want to see. It's like, exactly. It's like
let's do a show called Off Panel and just come up with all these.
The 4th of July barbecue at the Watchtower, the boom tube opens, here comes Aquaman and like five other guys in costume. Who are these, you know, like...
Oh, they're my five plus.
Right. These are the other guys I told you about when I went to Russia. Yeah. How dare you bring them here?
It's like, these are my plus five.
I just love it. I love that this is a story that they developed and never ever went back to it. Like, after the story arc, they're like, man, we'll go our separate ways again, and nobody says anything. It's like, what?
I mean, it's exactly the kind of storytelling that, you know, used to be the norm.
Right. Oh, for sure.
I mean, that's how the DC and Marvel universes both got so full of characters by the time they started publishing character guides. Because you would just do these little one-off stories, often with a lot of, you know, presumptive background, like out-of-nowhere histories.
Can we, speaking of out-of-nowhere stories, I think it's time... This we present the next section of this podcast in deference to Rick Gutierrez. If you're listening out there somewhere, this one's for you, buddy. It's time to talk about Atlantis Attacks.
Oh, God. Yeah, the Atlantis Attacks, that was the giant cross-annual.
Huge crossover.
Yeah, it was like everybody was going to be affected. Everybody. It's like, you know, the... It was like being on the front row of a Gallagher concert. Everybody's getting wet.
That was a really good. That was a really good analogy. I like.
Yeah, you know, love it or hate it, everybody's getting wet. So you've got the thing about Atlantis Attacks. It was supposed to be this big, big deal.
Yes.
Story arc. And all I could think of in the day was, shouldn't that have again after it?
Right, because I think they had...
How many times did Namor call up Titano Giganto and Great Big Asso, the giant whale people of the sea?
Right. Well, this one's even crazier, because this borders on, like, farce comics. Because there's an alien race out there called the Lemurians. The Lemurians were kind of like the Eternals, I guess, when it comes to Marvel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they were kind of just one out of many that would
right.
kind
and
of...
There was a great mystic of the Lemurian race by the name of... I'm just going to call him Gwar because it's easier. And the plot begins with the ghost of Gwar bait and switching Silver Surfer to steal his surfboard to get back to Earth. And I just imagine him putting on a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses with that that Ferris Bueller's Day Off song on. Boom, boom, oh yeah, just putting on sunglasses and taking off on the surfboard. But he wants to then reform the Serpent Crown. You know how we say Marvel Comics, like Marvel Comics Iron Fist or Marvel Comics The Black Panther? I feel like we should say Rick Gutierrez's The Serpent
the
Crown.
Serpent Crown.
So that's his thing, is to gain ultimate power by rebuilding a giant-ass serpent crown. And everything goes downhill from there. He forms an alliance with Atuma, previously mentioned Atuma.
It was Atuma.
He's going to transform...
Was Krang in that as well?
The
Atlantean general?
Oh, yeah, of course. Everything. Every sea-based anything was in this bitch. So... He needs to, apparently, to remake the Serpent Crown, he needs to turn the population of Earth into weird snake people a la Dreamscape with... Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, the subway scene.
Dennis Quaid's Dreamscape. damn it. And he comes up with this with none other than with Viper. The Viper? Do you remember Viper?
Yeah.
Everybody remember Viper?
I remember her.
And Tyrannus. Oh my god, there's so much to this thing.
Yeah, like everybody came on board for that. And of course, you've got anytime there's a whiff of the Serpent Crown, the Serpent Society are all over that, like, you know, stray dogs on trash night.
Oh yeah. And we're going to bring back Set. That's the overall goal, is to bring back Set with the Serpent Crown, but Set, you know, won't come back. Set doesn't get out of bed.
You know why?
Why?
He's set his ways, Coral.
Set
his ways.
God damn it. God damn it. But Set don't get out of bed for anything less than a blonde-haired virgin. So Dagger became Set's kind of betrothed.
Oh, of course.
Do you remember that? Indeed. Do you remember? I'm remembering all of this. I read Ding the Dong.
I actually kind of avoided it, but...
Yeah, kidnap seven superpowered heroines to become the brides of Set for the seven heads of the Serpent Crown. They went all in on this thing. Like, full on. Yeah, Krang, Viper, U-Man, Tyrannus, Tyrax, Set, Diamondback and Sidewinder, Mr. Jip, Lord Arno, Gwar, Atuma, the Abomination were all the villains, and the heroes were just everybody. Just everybody. But yeah, you got to see in this thing, you got to see the like you said, something we need to touch on, which is the kind of giant cetaceous creatures that apparently live under the sea yet have weird kind of knobby rhinoceros legs.
Yeah, it's the strange sperm whale people who just come up out of the sea every now and again and, you know, would make Captain Ahab blanch. It's after a while, the sea, you'll get a storyline where you begin to realize why we don't go there.
Well, you get a storyline that gives you the genius insanity of Jack Kirby, or the populist crazy that is Stranko, or, you know, these guys and their imagination was insane. Because who takes a whale, draws a whale, stares at a whale for an hour, and then says, you know what, this motherfucker needs some legs.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Jack, why don't we have a great big whale that has his sea legs under it?
Jack's like, I can do that. He didn't even say what. He's like, on it. Yeah. Give me 15 minutes. Like, what? Like, it's insane. And monster? What weren't they Denizens of Monster Island at one point? Like,
I think they may have been remanded there later, like everybody else.
Oh my god!
But that that was one of my favorite things. Is any time Atlantis attacked, is to find the old, you know, Kirby any reprints and such, to see that Giganto and Titano come up out of the. Out of the straits there, whatever there, I don't know what the hell they call that, but you know, like right on the coastal areas there of Manhattan,
right up into the Hudson, just marching on up.
Oftentimes, you know, capsizing big ships and what have you.
It's fantastic. So, it's fantastic.
Absolutely wonderful. Can we talk a moment, though, about the sea is not immune
to
popular comic tropes.
Okay.
The sea is not immune to sidekickery.
No, it is not. You are absolutely correct.
Because Aquaman couldn't be Aquaman without his Aqualad.
That's true. That's true.
And because, I mean, you need a little help. Help if your domain is most of the Earth, and then of course Aqualad, to bring in the younger set, needs a love interest in Tula, Aqua Girl, the Mira to his Aquaman.
Right.
So you have essentially, especially in Aqua Girl, the girl opposite of, you know, so you've got your Batgirl, you've got your Robin, you've got your pretty much everybody that
Wonder managed. Girls and your yeah
well and with Mira, pretty much anybody that Batman took, you know, half an hour every 6 months to have a relationship with before
to throw it back. In before he went back to the cave.
Before moving back to the night. It's like I just remembered I'm the night. Well, that was unsatisfying.
It dawns on me.
In my moment of sexual ecstasy, I remembered, I am the knight.
What do you think about after the knights? Can we cuddle? I only caress the knights. It's
like, my life, my love, and the lady is the, and my lady is the knight.
Oh my god, somebody record that song. Somebody re-record Looking Glasses.
That's right. And also there's
at night down in Gotham town. Okay, I'm writing it in my head right now.
There's a guy driving all around.
I imagine that the person singing that song is Joe Chill.
So, you know, you have basically everything you get with your land-based characters is given over, especially at DC. But, you know, Namor had Namor Rita.
Yeah, and Namora later, I think later.
Oh, yeah, Namora.
Either Namora was earlier or later. Namor Rita and sorry, Christopher Walken, were clones of each other, and I don't know which direction it went. I don't know what the chicken or the egg was there. But you know what they say about...
the chicken or the egg of the sea.
You know what they say about Aqualad? You can't,
I'm keen to know.
You can't rule the sea without a little help and a big-ass seahorse. Because Aqualad had the biggest-ass seahorse of them all. What was that damn thing's name?
Squirtle? No, it's a Pokemon.
Scrunchy? I don't know what his name was.
I don't remember.
It's a giant ass seahorse. My brain is full of important things.
But see, that was the other thing is I loved, you know, for Namor he got to have the giant walking whale, and for Aquaman there were the herd of big ass seahorses to ride around on. And you know, if you're unfamiliar with the seahorse as a fish, it's one of the most awkward fishes in the sea.
Right.
And they're probably just the actual body plan of that type of animal. Not really given over to saddling up.
No, not really. They're too busy giving birth as males. They can't. Yeah, they don't have time for that shit.
Yeah, and nothing's more awkward than you're riding into battle against Black Manta, and all of a sudden, you know, your mount is just weeping baby seahorses
everywhere. Oh, my God!
Out of its midsection. It's just like a confetti cannon of living animals. It's...
God damn.
If you ever see, it is the miracle.
It is. It's so, David Attenborough needs to
that's right.
Needs to give a voiceover for that.
Aquaman's seahorse begins to give birth, the miracle of life, the goes full circle as the dozens of relatively tiny seahorses, naturally all easily a meter long.
Now, right. Now, Marvel was not singular in their aquatic heroes. You know, sometimes you got to ask the important questions, like, what if we had a Tony Stark of the sea?
Oh, well, who pray tell would put their armor building predispositions to that task?
One of our favorite unsung superheroes, the Stingray. Constant companion to all the actual heroes of the sea. Stingray would come along and help the likes of the Submariner and turned afoul of the Tiger Shark a time or two, helped Triton of the Inhumans, fought Atuma,
pretty much it's like a Lonely Hearts Club down there in the ocean, because there's not very many of them.
It's like I say about British actors. Why are all the British actors so good? Because there's only five of them. That's why.
it just gets to the point where, like, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? You want to go, like, poke Orca with a stick? Okay.
It's like, has a tomb
been
around?
And they go, like, swim around, they find Orca, and they poke him with a stick. You're like, who dares? Because, that, you know, when you're Orca, you say things like, who dares?
I forgot
it's
about
just
Orca.
It's a big game. It's just, you know, Tiger, Shark, Orca. They're all, it's just something to do to pass the dull and meaningless existence below the waves.
But yes, what he did was, he was an oceanographer that developed a stingray suit that basically was sort of the Iron Man suit of the sea. Now, that being said, Iron Man, of course, has his own Iron Man suit of the sea, which I'm pissed off Stingray to no end. Just, I'm already here. Why are you
probably
here?
Probably pissed them all, everybody off. Anyone under the water were a little ticked that...
And actually, at one point, Iron Man actually confronts Stingray, believing that his suit was based during the Armor Wars based on Stark technology. And Newell, he's like, "No, you Huberian asshole! Other people can make suits too. Like, get off my dick, man!" And then they had to fight somebody. Instead of a superhuman, superhero fight, which is what we usually see, it was more of like a whiny slap fight.
Oh, look, is that Captain Kraken coming over here this way?
Right, it was a whiny slap fight until they actually had somebody to fight. So that was just dumb. But yeah, I love Stingray because he's sort of what happened. It would be like if Sasquatch never turned into Sasquatch and got an Iron Man suit. What was his name? Charles Bukowski. What was the name of the Sasquatch? I don't think it
Walter,
was...
Walter Lankowski.
Yeah, I don't think it was Charles Bukowski. Sometimes you just gotta pee in the sink is not something that the Sasquatch ever said. But yeah, so hats off to you, Stingray. You son of a bitch.
Have Namor and Stingray both have the distinction of having been Avengers... Of all things, Shudder, they were members of, I'm sorry, I vomited a little, Deep Six.
Deep Six, baby!
Deep Six were the Margaville Seven of Marvel.
Do you remember the members of Deep Six?
Well, Deep Six had obvious members.
Sure,
like
sure.
Namor, Tiger Shark, Triton, and Stingray, as well as, what the hell was her name?
Mara? The one from Alpha Flight?
No, it was Namor's full blue Atlantean girlfriend.
Amphibian? Or no, Dolphin.
What the hell was her name?
Wasn't it Dolphin?
No, Dolphin's from DC. Dolphin
Oh, you're right. Now I'm looking it up because I gotta.
Yeah, now you gotta know. But of all things, what was her name? Carol Danvers would then become in the X-Men.
Is it Tamara?
That may be it. I may be thinking of channeling somebody else with the character who.
Deep Six.
Deep Six.
Tiger Shark, huh?
Yes, indeed. Tiger Shark. Oh, God. Tiger Shark. I love me some Tiger Shark. I have, you may remember Andy and I very many years ago gushing because we were blessed with someone going to San Diego Comic-Con who got us that villain set that had the 3¾-inch scale Tiger Shark.
Right.
And then, in fact, I'm sorry, I thought from the picture I saw that the character in Deep Six was binary.
Right.
And I think it turned out to be this Tamara, whatever, which made it suddenly less exciting. Because it just seemed rather awkward that Binary from X-Men would somehow, she had like zero connection to the sea. But I got that one. I've got, of course, the Marvel Legends Tiger Shark. Never imagined that. And there is a Tiger Shark Bowen Collectibles.
Oh, man.
Did a Tiger Shark mini bust that I want. Because, frankly, when you do a focus collection of Tiger Shark, you're done at that point. And I'll try to see if I can get a picture of it up on this episode. Bobby Blakey actually drew me a Tiger Shark one time years ago. Bob, the Blakey-style Tiger Shark.
It's fantastic.
In fact, we were going to do a podcast years ago. We were developing a show called Fight Scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby had done about 15 different drawings of pairings of different heroes and villains and such from all different publishers, and one of them was Tiger Shark versus Savage Dragon, and my title for that episode would have been Finned Furies.
Tiger Shark was awesome though, man. Like Tiger Shark was pretty great.
Tiger Shark's an amazing character who has been like so many characters that nobody cares enough about that they really are all that bothered if you just start doing whatever you want with them.
Right.
And Tiger Shark, and I also have the Eagle Moss Tiger Shark.
Oh, do you?
Which is wonderful because the Eagle Moss figurines come with a magazine. So you learn more about Tiger Shark than you ever wanted to know. And you see all these iterations where he literally becomes a Tiger Shark. And apparently at one point when I was looking around at some Tiger Shark imagery, I don't know if they were channeling Sci-Fi Channel or, who is it that makes the movies you love so well?
The Asylum?
Asylum, yeah. I don't know if they were channeling the Asylum there, but there was actually, I found an image, God's truth, two-headed Tiger Shark.
That's hilarious. So Tiger Shark's origin is a little like Doctor Strange, but way stupider.
Well, you know, I think in the future we're going to see a Tiger Shark NATO.
I would love to see a Tiger Shark NATO.
It's kind of like if you took the character Red Tornado from DC. It's like Tiger Shark, but he can turn his lower body into a tornado.
So it's like Tiger Spout.
Yeah,
tip me over and pour me out. Apparently he was a professional swimmer that was told he was never going to swim again after he got injured. So he went.
That's right.
So he went out and used a Morphitron to imprint Tiger Shark DNA into his body, and also later down the road some of Namor's to give him giant tiger teeth and a dorsal fin and the ability to swim real fast. And then apparently allow him to get choked out by the Punisher at some point, which is what happened to him.
Which ironically is a slightly less ridiculous notion than that movie, The Deep Blue Sea.
Hey, that movie was fantastic. I do want to see it would have been much better if Tiger Shark would have eaten Samuel L. Jackson.
Especially if, Samuel L. Jackson's given his soliloquy, it was Tiger Shark that jumped out. No. Spoiler alert.
So we're running up against it. So how about we jump to some of our favorite lesser known sea based.
There is such a, you know, like the sea itself. There's, you know, beneath the waves there are many myriad superheroes and villains. That was the worst Jacques Cousteau ever.
That was a pretty bad Jacques. That was almost a Steve Zissou's Life Aquatic version of Jacques
Cousteau. Yes, it was. The interns get Glocks.
I'm going to kill that fucking shark.
You mentioned, of course, you know, Dolphin and Tula and stuff. Earlier, we started to mention Marina.
Yes.
From the Alpha Flight. I remember John Byrne writing about the creation of Marina, and she's like an alien character who hatches from an egg, and the egg is actually found by a human couple in a Ma and Pa Kent kind of way. And it sort of, that's why her, she gets that largely humanoid look, where whatever species she was supposed to be from the stars would not necessarily have had that.
So nature versus nurture in the biggest way possible?
That's right.
Well, overrides, you know, like DNA and 1,000 years of, okay, I'm with it.
Yeah, billions of years of evolution, and right. All it takes is just a French-Canadian cow. Oh, if in Nova Scotia you find some green girl in an egg. And you just, what do? You just raise her.
Oh, there was a tale of a long time ago of a green girl hatched from an egg.
That's right.
Every damn show. I'm going to work it into every
original working
show.
Name for Marina was Getcha Gumi.
God damn it. Yes. Yes.
Yes, indeed. Now, how about we talk about the Fathoms?
The Fathoms?
I
do
say
tell.
The Fathoms because you have Joni Longtorso from the late, I'm drawing a blank on his name, the Image character Fathom.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember.
Michael
Turner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe so. From Fathom Comics.
Oh, my God. I hadn't even thought about Fathom.
Who, like every Michael Turner female character, has a 3-yard-long midsection, midriff, and wears a bikini.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of real estate.
Yeah. It's they're very serpentine in nature.
In all of his creations, yes.
Yeah. And so there's that one, which may be the most well-known to the bulk of our listeners. And I'm sure there are others who would be perking up and saying, oh, well, he's going to talk about elementals. And Fathom was the Bill Willingham elementals create the water aspect of the elementals.
What?
Who was also a green girl.
Oh, okay, okay. Old Chili Willingham's up to his old tricks.
Yeah, so it was there was a hot green girl chick long before the Michael Turner's Fathoms. So.
Okay, okay, and that's good. That makes sense. I like that.
And we mentioned in passing Triton from the Inhumans. I absolutely love Triton the way Triton was in the Lee and Kirby era. I don't really like what he's become in other incarnations. It just there's no necessity to change that.
No, no.
With his like fish unibrow and his sagittal crest and his little his back fin and his this and his natural skin that Aquaman based his costume on.
Right. No, there is no reason for it. The little tidy pinkies and the fish scales, that's enough. That sells
yeah.
it. That sells it.
Yeah,
you don't need to armor him up.
You don't have to turn him into a smooth skin, giant fin creature. And we talked about in the Squadron Supreme, there was
the Amphibian.
The Amphibian, who was basically their throwaway Aquaman, because they felt like they had to mimic absolutely everybody. And I'm fairly certain that I've seen this. I could have sworn at one point I saw some image of the Squadron Supreme that included a Skrull.
Yes, yes.
I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be their Martian Manhunter.
The Skrullian Spymaster was his name. And
how was it?
Okay, yes. And he
was like the Skrull Shapeshifter or something.
So instead of the Martian Manhunter, you have the Skrullian Spy Hunter. Spymaster, the Skrullian Spymaster, yeah. Yes. Along with the Golden Archer, the Lady Lark, Tom Thumb, Blue Eagle, Arcana, Nuke, of course, Dr. Spectrum, Wizard, Princess Power, Nighthawk, and Hyperion. So, yeah, you've got the whole rondo of Justice League characters
indeed.
In there.
That, yeah, it was just such a blatant ripoff. But what was interesting is this non-entity character becomes a semi-entity in Straczynski. Well, we're back to Straczynski.
Oh.
In Straczynski's Supreme Power for the Max imprint over at Marvel, which started out as a really good, some of the best JLA stories ever written.
Right.
But just like anybody else, Straczynski wrote himself into a hole with this trying to find something to do with the Aquaman-style character.
Yeah, and you know, a couple of really kind of, you know, bottom-of-the-barrel, no pun intended, aquatic characters were – I was actually shocked to find these because I did not know they existed. Jay Piscopo wrote a comic called The Undersea Adventures of Captain Eli. They made a character that was an homage to kind of Space Ghost, except, again, like I said about Space and the Sea, this was the Sea Ghost, And really cool kind of tongue-in-cheek space ghosty character if you're into that kind of Hanna-Barbera thing. That's out there. And my favorite thing. Nice. The favorite thing I found in the research for this show that I had no idea about was a character named Fishboy. Fishboy.
I remember seeing, by the way, Fishboy in your notes, and for a moment there I thought, wow, there was more than I realized with Fishboy Lost Prince of Atlantis from The Tick.
Yes. Oh, nice.
Who appears in the sidekick issue of The Tick.
Good nod.
As well as on the live action, the first live action television show, perhaps in the new one as well. Who knows?
So in between 68 and 75, there was a comic.
Good Lord, what a run.
Yeah. There was a comic strip written in Britain for the British comic book Buster. It was written by Scott Goodall and drawn by John Stokes.
They had actually adapted that comic book with Phil Collins as a movie, didn't they?
Buster? Yeah.
Yes.
God. Damn it. The only thing that was missing was Dudley Moore.
I don't think that's legal.
So Fishboy, otherwise known as Tarzan of the Sea, was a character that was deserted on a desert island as a baby and learned to survive as a feral child by learning to breathe underwater and talk to shark and other sea creatures. Wait, so I want to repeat that just so you can know how crazy batshit this is. Learning to breathe underwater.
Well, it's kind of like that song, you know, learning to fly without any wings.
It is.
So it's apparently you don't need, you know, it's like learning to breathe underwater without any gills.
It's equacious to a Tom Petty song. Yeah, it is.
But maybe that was Petty's little underhanded, you know, nod to Fishboy.
And my favorite line from the write-up on this is...
yes, indeed.
He also developed webbed fingers and toes, which gave him the ability to swim as fast as a car. What does that mean? Can someone tell me what learn to swim as fast as a car means? Anyone?
I also have to point out he can breathe underwater because he is a, and in quotations, hero.
Yeah, oh, that's right. He can breathe underwater because he's a hero. So, it follows his adventures as a teenager as he travels the world seas to find his parents and help people in trouble with his learned ability to breathe underwater and talk to shark. Oh, my God.
Oh, now, this is interesting.
Okay.
Because I'd heard of this book, and now all of a sudden I want to read the damn thing. This is going to be very English, I'm sure. But, Wildstorm under the DC imprint, I remember seeing a book called Albion.
Okay.
Which I was looking at that write-up of Fishboy. Apparently Fishboy appears in the 6-issue miniseries Albion, written by Alan Moore and his daughter Leia Moore and her husband John Ripplejohn.
Sure, that guy, of course.
Yeah.
So there is an Alan Moore take on the sea,
I guess just in a perhaps only in a small way. It says Fishboy appears in the 2005 comic Albion as one of many comic book characters who have been imprisoned by the British government. He was captured off the coast of Japan. He's seemingly grown more fish-like since his last appearance. Probably learned to be more fish-like.
Right. Well, that's what happens when you learn to breathe underwater.
Yeah, well, you know, under the tutelage of the British government, he probably learned a lot more fish things.
A lot more fish things. Just learned a bunch of fish things. I didn't realize this.
Let's put him in the pond and see how he comes out. Oh, yeah.
This is a...
my afternoon scotch.
I didn't realize this, and I have this book over here and haven't read it, and now I'm going to have to. A spinoff from Albion was Thunderbolt Jackson, written by Dave Gibbons. I did not realize that Thunderbolt Jackson was a spinoff of Albion, so I've been putting off reading it, and now I have a reason to read it. So there you go. Yeah. So I think we've done Fish People, Denizens of the Deep, and...
This was our fishiest episode yet, you know, you'll see why. The list goes on and on. There was a comic called Sea Guy that was a bit of a parody of the Aquaman and Namor type motifs. God, there were so many characters that sprung to mind that now escape me because there is really just an ocean full, a ton of characters like, you know, and of course, Aquaman had to have his own Aqua Rogues gallery. You had the,
oh, we didn't like, even touch on that. Yeah.
Yeah. The Fisherman, Black Manta, Ocean Master, Charybdis, we mentioned, just, and then of course, you know, Namor was mostly pissed off Atlanteans.
Just angry, yeah, angry Atlanteans, just almost like our, you know, a government situation, just mad, except they don't have lobbyists, they have trident swords. That's,
oh yeah, and it got to the point where there were so many, you know, pissed off Atlanteans that they had to, you know, sit down and hash out a lot of these grievances, and they created a organization called the Water Board.
I can't.
You can't go there.
I want to go there. Now I want to know what happens on the Water Board.
That's right.
Damn it, the Water Board.
The Water Board. So. There are just so many heroes, villains, and ancillary characters. We didn't even talk about like the Sea Devils at DC, who were like the, you know, at one point, high adventure, don't you know, was a big thing at DC. You had the Sea Devils taking care of any underwater adventures. You had Cave Carson spelunking away to see whatever he could find. And you had the Challengers of the Unknown, who pretty much got to mop up whatever was left.
And the Blackhawks taking care of the sky.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, and warfare things. Warfare things.
To the Water Board.
And I guess the only thing, the takeaway we have to have here, when we talk about the Aquaman Namor dynamic, apparently the one thing that is a universal, you go messing around in the water, you carry a trident.
You have to. It's a rule.
Yeah.
It is as important as carrying, you know, a bow is if you don't have superpowers. So
that's right.
So just keep that in mind.
The irony is that you do have superpowers, but you're obliged to carry around this really awkward pitchfork.
Well, it's really it evens the playing field. You know, it's like a duel. It's like a gentlemanly duel. If you're carrying your pitchfork, you know, you can't use your powers as adequately.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, so it's really it evens that playing field. All right, why don't you plug us up and we'll get out of here for the day. We are out of time.
Yes, indeed. We didn't even mention Lori Lamaris.
No, there's so many. Of course, there's so many that we didn't.
And I have to point out before we go, I was looking over some imagery of some of the aquatic characters for future flavor art for this thing. And someone had a picture of Steve Zazu from the Bill Murray and Steve Zazu next to Papa Smurf. I'm like, my God, I never realized.
The outfit is spot on.
It's like, damn it. He was cosplaying as Papa Smurf all along. And we never knew. So, yes, we're coming to you, of course, through the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. You can, and we're also now powered by Cinelink, so perhaps you picked us up there. And thank you very much for that. If you've enjoyed this show and you'd like to check out some of the other shows like the Rancor Pit and Renerding over at the Jedi Cole universe, just go to JediCole.com. We can, you can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. You can, look for tweets on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U, so please subscribe to that. And that's about all we got going on right now on the Jedi on the Hey Kids Comics end of things. But the aforementioned the Rancor Pit, the Star Wars podcast. You can also check out the Rancor Pit live at WatchOnAirLive.com. The first and third Sundays of every month. Live streaming out of Dallas, Texas, with myself and Eddie Funky Cold Medina. Be sure and check that out. We have had a lot of fun doing that show for just over 2 years. We've been doing this show for damn near 4 years now. And
Eddie's going to be real mad that he wasn't on this episode, by the way. He's going to be upset. I think that there's a part of him that absolutely loves the seafaring superheroes, but that's okay. And And in,
well, I was afraid if we had too many voices to get watered down. So.
No. Well, I can tell you this. In closing, in reference to the beginning of the show, it is wetter, but it's not better. I think I filled my pull up, so it's time to go.
I
feel like I'm weeping baby seahorses down here. So with that being said, let's say goodnight. Get out of here.
Say a fond farewell to the deepest depths of the ocean. And all of its many heroes and villains. And, of course, the full pull-ups.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.